Blind Cool Tech, number 46, July 14th, 2005. Hey y'all, how's everybody doing? I'm your host, Larry Skutkan, for another edition of Blind Cool Tech. We've got an interesting show for you today. Don Barrett will be joining us. Or actually, we have an interview that he sent in, or not an interview, excuse me, I can't talk this morning. We have a piece that he sent in through our new submission process. It's quite fascinating. We'll be getting to that shortly. Got a couple other announcements to make. One, we got a few emails and some comments on the comment line. Let's go ahead and get right into it.
Even though everything Hagrid had told him so far was unbelievable, Harry couldn't help trusting him. "This is it," said Hagrid, coming to a halt. "The Leaky Cauldron. The Leaky Cauldron. It's a famous place." It was a tiny, grubby-looking pub. If Hagrid hadn't pointed it out, Harry wouldn't have noticed it.
"If it's in Braille, then that's so... well, that's just a lot better. Because I don't want to feel left out."
"Don't leave me out. Please bring the magic of Harry Potter to blind children nationwide. Contribute to the Braille edition of the next Harry Potter."
And that's an ad from National Braille Press. You can get more information at nbp.org. As probably everyone knows, Harry Potter will be coming out in a couple of days. And National Braille Press has committed to making that available in Braille immediately upon the book's release. And also, Bookshare.org has committed to making the electronic version of that available to you Bookshare subscribers. We really are going to have to do a piece on Bookshare.org, and I regret missing the opportunity to interview Jim Fruchterman the other night while we were bowling. That probably wouldn't have been the best environment for an interview anyway. But Bookshare is a very exciting service, and they've put a lot of time and effort into, well, all of their books, but I remember the last Harry Potter, was that 1 year ago or 2 years ago already? It also was available on the day of the book's release. So this one will be too, so we'll all be looking forward to that. We got a couple of emails, one from Rob wanting to know more about the Arcos recorder and where to get more information about it, and some good comments about the podcast. Appreciate those, Rob. I had to laugh. One of the things he says is, "I never know what's coming next." And hey, I hope we can keep it that way. I hope we can keep it entertaining and surprising and lots of fun and good information. As far as the Arcos recorder goes, I mentioned to you that this particular one is no longer available. The one that I use is the Arcos Jukebox Recorder version 2. But if you do want information about the other Arcos products, their website is arcos.com. It's a French company, arcos.com. We also got a really nice email from Sharon. Hey, Sharon. Appreciate all the good information and good thoughts. Sharon is an itinerant teacher and an O&M, Orientation and Mobility Specialist. And so she drives a lot, and she has something in her car radio that I've wanted for years, which is an auxiliary input jack. And Sharon has become a big fan of the Bookport. So she plugs her Bookport into the auxiliary input on her radio and can listen to these podcasts and anything else that you can play on the Bookport. So one of the questions she had was about training for the Bookport. And I should mention, and I'm sorry that I didn't before, that APH is actually offering some webcasts of various aspects of Bookport training. Don't forget, too, that you can also look at the first few editions of this podcast to get some basic information on using the Bookport. But if you'd like to participate in this webcast, you can send an email to Maria Delgado, and her email is mdelgado, that's M-D-E-L-G-A-D-O, at aph.org. So she'll be glad to hook you up with some information to get you going where you can participate on the next few. And I know she will be making archives of those webcasts available so that you can download them at a later time. In the Department of Corrections, I have to make a correction to a correction. Yesterday I tried to correct the fact that the TTTT list was, the name was a little confusing, and I ended up saying dash subscribe instead of dash join. So the final word on this is that the address to subscribe is TTTT-join@top.enterprises.com. And that'll get you an email of the top tech tidbits for Thursday, the TTTT. Good information in there, Dean. Hope to see you keep those coming. And on to our next piece.
Hello. I have been listening to your podcast. I find it interesting and enjoyable. And I find you also very particularly interesting because I grew up and used the Apple II, and of course Tech Talker and all those things, and I was, I guess, kind of thought of you as my hero, so to speak, because, you know, I actually had a talking computer, and so many games and other entertaining things I did with Apple, and of course then you owned MicroTalk, and I used ProWords and things like that. One thing I was wondering, which is probably not your, you know, department, but it's worth asking, if there's any way that, I mean, I know MicroTalk has released their Apple program as far as rights issues, but if there's some way that APH would allow their programs to be distributed non-commercially, or ideally, of course, released into the public domain, because there's a site which you're probably familiar with. Jason Smith has been in contact with you, at least that's my understanding, and has mentioned that you had allowed distribution of the MicroTalk software. So I was wondering if you could check with anyone at APH and see what their, I guess, ruling or comment on that sort of thing is, because it would be nice, of course, to get those programs. And there are quite a few Apple emulators out there, not very accessible, unfortunately. There is one Apple II Plus emulator, which works fairly well. But, of course, there are people who still do have real Apples, including myself. It would be nice to get a hold of those, some of those programs, just to revive memories and all that stuff. But anyway, I do enjoy the podcast. I have been listening. I haven't listened to all of the material because there is just so much there, but I find it fascinating and interesting, and I always look forward to see what new things you'll come up with. Anyway, so maybe you can comment on some of your old Apple memories, and of course, Rob, I know Meredith also worked on Tech Talker, so maybe you can have him make some comments about his work on Apple. But anyway, I'll be listening, and thanks for the fine production.
All right, thank you. The caller didn't provide his name on the call, but it sounds like I recognize your voice, but not quite. Anyway, I was really had thought that APH had released its Apple software. I remember attending several meetings pushing for this, but I will double-check on that. I know the stuff that I did through MicroTalk and then turned over to APH, I know that stuff is been released into the public domain. I will check on the other stuff. There's probably a few of them that we won't be able to do, like the Sensible Speller, that were commercial products that other people have the rights to and that we had just modified. But I know some of the stuff that we did here, there's a good possibility that's already done. I just don't recall exactly. And as far as memories of the old Apple days, that was some pretty exciting times. I remember I did the first version of Pro Words, which was a word processor for the Apple. Started out in BASIC with some of the critical routines written in assembly language, and eventually the whole program was converted over to assembly. And I think one of my best memories of that was when we got over to the GS and we could load these, you know, large files all into memory. But one of the coolest things to this day, I think, about Pro Words and that whole concept of a word processor for blind users was this idea that the down arrow broke free from the constraints of the screen real estate. So in other words, when you pressed a down arrow in Pro Words, you moved sentence by sentence instead of a line down on the screen. You moved in literary units, which made it so much easier to proofread your work. You know, this light hit me one day. You know, why are we actually moving by what's on the screen when if you're interested in writing and cohesion, seems like the real way you want to do it is to move by literary units. So that's what we did, and I know it drove sighted people nuts because you could press a down arrow and they expected that cursor to move one line down on the screen right below where it was, but in reality it could end up anywhere down the screen depending on the length of your sentence. So it was a little bit disconcerting. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think we had a mode in there where you could turn that off. But again, I will. Those were some good memories. I had a lot of fun doing that Apple work, and I learned a lot, especially about assembly language and the way computers work. All right, on to our next piece.
Great swing, Dad. What's your secret?
It's no secret, Pumpkin. It's Provosil. Dr. Muscovy said it would make everything better, and boy, was he right.
Provosil. What's it for?
I don't actually know, but as long as I'm shooting below par, I'm not going to ask.
Sounds great. You think old Doc Muscovy would prescribe some Provosil for me?
Mind you, I'm no doctor, but the way I see it, Provosil's good for everybody, so far as I know.
But as you said, you're not a doctor.
That's right, Pumpkin. I'm just an ordinary guy who takes a lot of drugs.
And golfs like a son of a...
Provosil is not for everyone. Consult a physician before taking Provosil. Do not take Provosil if you ingest food on a daily basis. Side effects may include nausea, vomiting, headaches, stomach cramps, dizziness, confusion, liver and kidney failure, hemorrhaging, loss of mental acuity, diarrhea, shortness of breath, chest pains, swollen testicles, irritated bowel, pigeon toes, respiratory inflammation, permanent blindness, loss of sexual motivation, pancreatic dysfunction, Google eyes, polio, and temporary darkening of the stool.
Okay, I just ran across that yesterday on the Daily Source Code, and I thought it was so typical of the drug commercials that you see on TV, so just had to pass that along to you for a little bit of humor. Well, let's get on to our piece by Don Barrett, and take it away, Don.
Well, thank you, Larry. My name is Don Barrett, and let's get right to it. Sleep apnea, a fascinating syndrome and a fascinating cure for the syndrome. The word apnea is a Greek word which means without breath. It's an interesting word because basically that's in fact what apnea is. It is the whole notion of stopping breathing while you're asleep. And most people who suffer from this condition aren't even aware that they're not breathing. I've had it for years. I went and had a sleep study, which is a, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later, exactly what a sleep study is, but basically you spend the night in a laboratory and they hook you up front and back and all kinds of ways to machines, and you don't think you'll be able to sleep, but actually, since there's nothing else to do, you kind of fall asleep anyway, and they study you. And I had one years ago, and I was told I had mild apnea. Didn't do anything about it because insurance wouldn't cover it and that kind of thing. So, over the past 10 years or so, I have had symptoms that may be of interest to many of you. And I actually, looking back on it now, really wish I had done something about it years ago, because the only reason insurance wouldn't cover it back then is because it was listed as mild apnea. This last sleep study I had, I was listed as moderate to severe apnea, and consequently insurance did cover the remediation for the condition, and I'm a different person. Symptoms. Let's start at the beginning, and then we'll go into, well, you know, kind of a chronological order just so you can get a quick idea of what it's all about. I won't bore you with a lot of unnecessary details about my life which won't interest you, but suffice it to say that as a blind adult, I was experiencing absolute exhaustion every day. You know, aside from the fact I always chalked it up to not exercising and being overweight. Sleep apnea generally affects people, men over 40, who are somewhat overweight. I fit in that category. However, it can affect kids. It can affect people who are quite thin. But generally, the syndrome does increase in severity with weight gain. And we can get into why that's the case. But the point is, the symptoms I was experiencing and have been experiencing for the past 10, 15 years has just been literally going through life half asleep. And this means falling asleep at work, being known as the person who fell asleep in meetings all the time. The only thing that saved me from getting in real trouble, people thought it was kind of funny because I was a good producer at other times, and I fortunately was competent enough in other areas that I just told people I had a low metabolism and made up things like, you know, lack of visual stimulation causes that in blind people. How's that for a good one? And I would literally come home from work and just sit in a chair and fall asleep for 2-3 hours. Couldn't watch a TV show or listen to the radio or anything without just dozing right off. I mean, I was constantly exhausted on the way home, and if I was being driven home in a car, or if I was in a cab or on the bus, I'd fall asleep in the vehicle. Any opportunity of sitting still, I would just fall asleep. And I just assumed, because I didn't exercise and I was a little overweight, I just assumed that that's the way people live, and I couldn't do anything about it, and had no idea that there was an actual syndrome, an actual situation that was causing it. Well, my wife at the time suggested that I might have a problem because she heard me literally stop breathing in my sleep. And my snoring was known far and wide as absolutely horrible. And part of apnea is a lot of snoring. As a matter of fact, the whole notion of not being able to breathe arises from snoring that's so severe that the whole throat closes up and the back of the throat closes up and literally does not allow air into your trachea, into your bronchial tubes, into your lungs, through your trachea, and the whole breathing apparatus shuts down. The reason that weight gain affects it the way it does is that naturally, as fat deposits increase in various areas of your body, the back of the throat is no different. And the whole notion of what causes apnea is the same thing as what causes snoring. Basically, when you think about playing the flute or clarinet or a wind instrument, you vibrate a reed of some kind with air, and that creates a sound. Well, when you're snoring, you're literally vibrating the whole area in the back of your throat, you know, your soft palate, your uvula, your tonsil area. That whole system is vibrating because your muscles are so relaxed that that whole area is vibrating with the air moving back and forth. Now, what happens with apnea, of course, is those tissues in the back of your throat area become so relaxed that as you snore and the air literally pulls them over the trachea and your throat closes down and you can stop breathing for, some people stop breathing for over a minute. This literally happens hundreds of times during the night. And sometimes people can wake up gasping and or they'll have dreams of not being able to breathe. They'll wake up gasping, that kind of thing. Most people with apnea, and it's estimated that around 12 million people in this country suffer from sleep apnea. That was a recent NIH estimate. But most people have no idea that they have it. All they know is that they wake up feeling rotten, and they go through their entire day feeling rotten. They may not even have insomnia, and they think that they're sleeping well, and they just have no idea what's wrong with them. So what prompted this latest sleep study that I had maybe 2 months ago, I went to visit my brother, and basically he actually shook me during the night, and he said, "I'm sorry to bother you, but I thought you died. You stopped breathing for so long." And I had never had anybody say anything like that to me, and it made me realize that I must have a significant issue with not being able to breathe. So, in fact, I went for another sleep study. And in the sleep study, they basically hook you up to an EEG. They have a little thermistor under your nose to monitor your breathing. They put bands around your chest and around your stomach so that at the same time they can monitor the movement of your diaphragm in and out and your chest in and out. And the whole notion is that they want to look at your breathing processes. They look at your EEG to determine, are you not breathing? They have a thing on your finger called an oximeter, which is very crucial because when you do stop breathing in your apneic events, this oximeter actually measures the oxygen level in the blood in your finger, and they can tell from a very real consequence what the effect is in terms of the lack of oxygen in your blood. Now, generally, you want to stay between 90 and 100. In my sleep study, I went down to 76%. And I literally, they said, I was stopping breathing every 10 minutes, waking myself up, and that's what happens is generally the brain kicks in and wakes you up to force you to breathe, because the brain would rather do that than let you die, of course. I was waking up so that I could breathe again, not even being aware of it, falling back to sleep. 10 minutes would go by, I would stop breathing again because I was in a deeper sleep. And then I would wake up again so that I could breathe. And that cycle continued throughout the entire night. So they said to me, of course, no wonder you feel rotten during the day. The quality of your sleep is absolutely atrocious. And any time you start to get some decent sleep, you immediately stop breathing. And that forces you, it's like somebody shaking you every 10 minutes. Imagine being shaken by someone every 10 minutes or so and woken up. Just think of how rotten you would feel the next day. Well, that's what happens to people every night that they're asleep and they're experiencing apneic events, is that they're not breathing and this is happening to them and they're not even aware of it. So consequently, I went I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor who referred me for the sleep study because I reported severe tiredness. And I said to him, I really think that my apnea has increased because of what my brother had said. And I had had mild apnea 10, 15 years prior, but I've had a significant weight gain, I'm sorry to say. And I felt that there's probably a real issue going on here. Well, sure enough, that's what was happening, and I had sleep apnea, and to a severe extent, it can cause high blood pressure, it can cause cardiovascular disease. If you do have a heart condition, it can actually result in a heart event, a heart attack, or other event where the heart is not getting the oxygen it should because your whole body is not getting the oxygen that it needs. And it's in that sense, it can be very dangerous. And I think it's even believed that some people have actually expired as a result of not being able to breathe in combination with having a significant cardiac condition. I don't have the stats on that, but I've heard anecdotally that that's been suspected in those kinds of fatal heart condition cases, you know, which occurred during the night. So anyway, you know, you say to yourself, okay, well, what's the cure? Well, obviously for me, it was much less significant when I was thin. So part of the issue is for me to lose weight. Well, what do I do in the meantime? there are a number of surgical solutions which are available, which all involve either cutting away or tightening up, and there's various different scenarios that surgeons use. Sometimes they cut away part of the soft palate and then sew it back together, all with the notion of tightening up enough of the area in the back of your throat so that when you breathe, even though it becomes relaxed, it's not so relaxed that it ends up closing off the airway. That surgery is iffy. It's maybe 50% effective. Some people have excellent results with it. Some people have very poor results, and they're snoring, and their apnea still continues afterwards. I wanted to avoid all that, and I had a long talk with my ear, nose, and throat person, who is also a surgeon, and he recommended this machine, which I had heard of before, but had no experience with, called a CPAP machine, CPAP. Now, that stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure, and that's exactly what it does, and we'll get into that. And it's an absolutely fascinating machine, and I'm going to demonstrate it before the end of this podcast. Literally, and let me add here, during the sleep study, what they did was half of the night I was studied without a CPAP machine, and once they determined that I did have a problem, they woke me up, and I spent the rest of the night with a CPAP machine on board, as they say, or in use, and when I had the machine, my oxygen levels stayed up within the 90% to 100% range, and I slept fine. So it was probably the first time in 10, 15, 20 years that I had a decent night's sleep. Consequently, the surgeon recommended, or the doctor recommended, a CPAP machine, and the health company that I used came out to the house and brought the machine. Basically, it looks like a vacuum cleaner. The base unit looks like a small table radio, or let's say a boom box without speakers. It's relatively small, it weighs 4 pounds. They do have more portable units if you travel a lot. This particular unit's a Remstar Pro by Respironix. It's probably their top-of-the-line model, and I think all told costs around $2,000, although insurance is going to cover most of that, thankfully. And anybody who is prescribed, you can only get it if it's prescribed. Generally, insurance does cover, once it's recommended by a physician, that you do need this to correct sleep apnea because, as I said earlier, sleep apnea is a potentially dangerous condition. So, the machine, again, looks like a small table radio, and one end of it is a wire that plugs into the wall, and on the other end of it is a hose, a 6-foot hose, and that's where the vacuum cleaner reference kind of comes from. And this hose ends in a facial mask that you wear over your nose at night. And this machine does a couple things. There is a humidifier and a heater you can get so that it humidifies the air that you're breathing. That's kind of ancillary and not really necessary, but in the winter it may help. We'll have to see as the months go by. But the two main things that this machine does, first and foremost, when you turn it on and the mask is over your nose, it literally, as you breathe in, air is being pressurized in your mask and forced up your nose, although you don't even realize it because you're just simply breathing in air that's being blown into the mask. Now, they measure this in centimeters. The machine goes from 4 to 20 centimeters. My setting is on 8, and it's prescription. Again, that's part of the prescription, that I'm on a setting of 8 centimeters, and I think it has to do with the amount of energy to move 8 centimeters of water or something like that. Some people are on 10, 12. Once you start getting into the 12, 14 centimeter range, it's very powerful, and you have to be careful because it can start affecting your eardrums. Because what's happening is it's literally blowing air into this mask that you're wearing. And as the name CPAP suggests, it's constant positive airway pressure. It's forcing air into your throat area through your nose so that when you're sound asleep, the pressure of the air, just like a balloon, is kept inflated by air pressure. It kind of treats the back of your throat literally like a balloon. This constant positive airway pressure keeps your throat from closing in on itself. Your snoring goes way down. The people you live with love you a lot better, or at least tolerate you a lot better. And most important is your apneic events stop, because your trachea does not close over. You continue to breathe fine. You're sound asleep, and you don't realize it, but your quality of sleep goes way up. Okay, now that you know we've gone through all that, results. Very briefly, for the first time in 10, 15 years, I literally am awake all day until it's time to go to bed. I sit in the cab on the way home. I'm wide awake. I talk to the driver. I talk to the person I'm with. I come home. I can sit down and watch TV. I can go play on the computer. I can go do whatever I want. I can talk to people. I can go out. I am not tired in the evenings. It's amazing. It's literally like getting a new... it's like a shot of energy, whereas before. Now, is it foolproof? I mean, if I overeat big time for lunch, of course I'm going to get sleepy. I might even doze off. You're not immune from falling asleep during the day. If you're bored silly and you like to sleep and you use it as a defense mechanism, of course you're going to still fall asleep. But the point is, you don't have to sleep because you're not sleep deprived. Sleep during the day becomes a choice, unless you really overeat and stuff yourself. Then you kind of doze off just because all the blood goes to your stomach and to digest your food, and consequently your energy level goes way down. You know, that's a medical proven fact. So after the beginning with the CPAP, you have plenty of energy during the day. I'm recording this in the evening. I'm wide awake. I have no desire to go to sleep. It's literally like a new lease on life. It's one of those real situations where it's not like, well, I think it's improved and I think I'm getting better. I mean, it's a marked change, like the difference between night and day, excuse the pun. I really feel an unbelievable change. Now, do I wake up really wild and ready to go in the morning? No, I'm still tired. I still hate getting up in the morning for work, but I do it. But once I get up and jump in the shower, I feel good and I feel fine, and I feel fine all day long until 11, 11:30 at night, and that's so unusual for me. So I won't go on and on about it, but it's simply to say to any of you out there who are listening, and you know, I'm no physician, of course, and don't even pretend to make any medical prescriptions or diagnoses for anyone. But suffice it to say, if you do have an issue where you're sleeping all the time and you can't stay awake for an entire day and you do have a real lack of energy, it is possible that you could have sleep apnea. If the people you live with, if you happen to live with anyone, inform you that you do stop breathing during the night and that your snoring is really awful. Usually the two go hand in hand. The snoring's really bad and the breathing stops. Then there's a real good chance you have it, and don't take it for granted. You know, it can go on for years and you just kind of, you think, well, that's just the way I am. I'm a low energy person. I'm a person with low metabolism. I just, you know, that's life. That's me. Oh, well. No, absolutely not. That's not the case at all. And this machine, this little baby here, has made all the difference in the world for me. So I'm going to go get the machine now and plug it in. And I'm going to put the mask on. I'll let you hear it. I mean, I'm not sure how big a deal it'll be doing this demo, but at least you'll get an idea of how it sounds. I mean, as I said before, it's basically a fan motor that blows air through a tube into your lungs. I forgot to say what else it does. It's very cool. The reason the machine's so expensive is, number one, it has a card in the side that literally records its activity all night for up to 6 months. And you can send in this card, and they download from the microchip that's in this card into a computer and print out a report. It shows how many hours a night you use it. It shows the pressure that it's, you know, the 8 centimeters or whatever your setting is. And it shows your respiration, because the machine actually can monitor your respiratory activity. This particular brand, the Respironics brand, they've patented a process called C-Flex. And what C-Flex basically does is, as you're breathing in, the machine senses that your inhalation pressure is slowing down, and it actually cuts down on the airflow to allow you to breathe out. And there are little ports in the mask that kind of let the air flow out into the atmosphere, because you don't want to keep rebreathing the same air. But the machine is smart enough to know when you're breathing in, when the inhalation is stopped, and then when you start breathing out, the pressure reduces way down to let you breathe out. Some of it goes into the hose, some of it goes out of the mask. As soon as you're ready to start breathing in again, the pressure jumps right back up to the 8 centimeters or 10 or whatever your setting is, and again, it keeps that positive airway pressure going. But it's a very sophisticated machine, because it's not just a fan. It's a fan with great sensing capability, so that it can actually monitor your respiratory activity and record it on this microchip and keep track of it, of your inhalation and exhalation, and literally reduce the pressure to allow you to exhale easily. What's it like wearing the mask? You're probably wondering that. It's a mask with a strap that goes around the back of your head and a strap that goes around the back of your neck. And it's a soft plastic, so it doesn't hurt at all. If you have it too tight, it hurts. If you have it too loose, it leaks. It takes some adjusting. They fit you for it. But sitting at a dining room table, they never quite fit you the way you're really going to when you're lying down all night. You do a lot of self-adjusting for the first 2 weeks. Took me 2 solid weeks to really get used to the mask, and now it's nice and soft. It doesn't even bother me. I used to wake up in the morning, and I had taken it off in my sleep, and I realized it was too tight, so I loosened the straps, and then it started leaking significantly around my cheeks, and then I had to tighten it up a little bit. And I made plenty of adjustments, but that's a good thing, because you want to play with it till you get it right. There's another kind of mask which I also tried. I thought I would really like it. It's called nasal pillows, and it's a lot easier to put on and take off, because it's not a mask over your face, but it's little round protuberances that go up your nose and force the air right up your nose, but there's no mask. I found it in the morning. I had headaches from that. It somehow bothered my sinuses, and it kind of irritated my nostrils. After a couple nights with that, I decided to go back to the mask. But it's nice to try a couple different things and see which one is best for you. But I encourage any and all of you who feel like you might have the condition, talk to your physician about it. A lot of doctors don't even think about it. You know, you go in and you say, I'm exhausted all the time, and they do blood tests. And they say, well, exercise more or lose some weight or take vitamins. A lot of times people don't even think of sleep apnea as a possible cause. It's a very real, very powerful syndrome which can definitely affect you and make you exhausted throughout your life and really ruin your quality of life. So I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to go get the machine. I'll be back in 1 second, and we'll just have a quick demo of it. You'll see that it's hard for me to talk with it on because air is being pushed through my nose, and as I try to talk, it kind of makes me sound funny. So we'll have a little bit of fun with it. Okay, I've got the machine here, and I'm holding the hose with the mask on the end, and the mask swivels very easily on the hose to allow you to move in your sleep and that kind of thing. The mask looks like it would just fit over your nose. There's a headpiece which goes up against your forehead, and you probably would wonder why that would be the case. It anchors the mask in place. Without that forehead piece, they found that the masks would just move a lot more in your sleep. So it's pretty clever design. These masks are pretty expensive. I think they run around $150 a piece. I think what I'm going to do is put the mic inside the mask so you can get a real first-hand sound of what's really going on in there. Here we go. Okay, enough of that. Kind of sounds like a podcast of Larry mowing the lawn during a tornado. How about that one, Larry? Maybe you can work on that one for us. Anyway, you got to wonder, you know, how does you sleep with that much air and how do the people near you sleep with that much noise? But the reality is once the mask is on, it's pretty quiet around you. And although it sounded tornado-like, the way it feels as you're breathing in is just that it's much easier to breathe in because air is being pushed up your nose, but it doesn't hurt or anything like that, and there's no turbulent air of any kind. So it really isn't as horrific as it sounds, but I wanted to show you through the sound that there is definitely air being forced through the mask, and it definitely does have an effect, and a good effect, on your respiratory system. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the mask on, and I'm going to have the microphone in front of my mouth as I do now, and you're going to see that you can really not hear anything because the mask really keeps everything down and keeps the airflow from making all that noise because it's really controlled in a much, much better way than when it was before. So I'm going to stop this for a second and put the mask on. We'll be right back. Okay, the mask is on, and the airflow has not started yet because I'm talking and breathing through my mouth. I'm going to begin to breathe in and out through my nose, and then you'll hear when I start talking, the airflow is going to really mess up my voice. But let's give it a shot. Let's allow the auto feature to turn on here. So I'm going to start breathing through my nose with this mask on. The air is coming on now. As you can hear, I'm trying to talk, but it's somewhat difficult because air is being forced into the back of my throat. It's not painful at all. It just makes me sound kind of silly, like I'm about to cry, and I'm not. So, as I breathe in, the pressure increases. As I breathe out through my nose, the pressure decreases. Of course, talking through my mouth, the machine doesn't know what I'm doing, so it's kind of confused, but that's okay. All right, I'm going to take this mask off at the moment. And here you can hear all the noise it's making. And that's the end of that. Okay, that's the CPAP machine. Very fascinating, very useful, very worthwhile piece of equipment. Made an unbelievably huge difference in my life. And, of course, if you don't have sleep apnea, it's pretty useless. Although it's kind of fun to play with. But if you do have sleep apnea, It can literally give you energy that you just haven't had for a long, long time. So, that's my little demonstration. I want to thank Larry for including me in this podcast. I think Blind Cool Tech is one of the best podcasts around, and I even said that and felt that before he agreed to include me in this. One unsolicited advertisement before I leave. Some of you may remember quite a number of years back, Charlie Crawford and I worked on the Talking Checkbook. It was a DOS-based program, and at the time there was just nothing around to help blind folks like us manage our checkbooks, and Charlie worked on it for a number of years, and I came in kind of late in the game and added a few features here and there, and we both kind of worked on it, and I think the last release of it was in the mid-90s. Well, I have to say that I am no longer using the Talking Checkbook. I'm using Money Talks, which is APH's latest software release. It is by far the best thing around for managing your bank account. It is so flexible in terms of what it does, and I won't go into lots of detail here. Larry's done some excellent, a couple podcasts, once demonstrating how to balance your account using the bank grid, and once demonstrating on how to balance your account just using the register feature, a much simpler way of doing it. But the display and the voice and the number of columns and the way the columns speak, everything is done so unbelievably flexible in a flexible manner that you just have so many choices. It's the best, one of the best pieces of software I've seen in a long, long time. I am an avid Money Talks user. I had a spreadsheet. I was using the Talking Checkbook. I use nothing else now but Money Talks. And I would just encourage any of you, if you've been thinking about it and you haven't gotten it yet, really make a decision and go do it, because it's just one great piece of software. I think it should be in every single school for the blind. I think every rehab center should own a bunch of copies for all of their blind clients. Like I say, there's just nothing like it out there, and it's cheap, too. It's $49 for the CD version, which gives you the AT&T Natural Voices. It's $39 if you download it without the AT&T Voices. It is self-voicing, or it'll work with the screen reader, and it's just one terrific piece of software. Rob Meredith, who worked on it, is a crackerjack programmer, and you know, Larry and Terry Turlow, the folks at APH, have just done a super job on it. So I hope everybody who hears this gets a chance to play with and use the software. All right, well, I want to thank you all so much for listening to this, and Larry, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, Don. Fascinating information. Appreciate you sending that in. And also, thank you for the kind words on Money Talk. That means a lot from someone who's actually written an accessible banking package. If any of the other of you listeners would like to submit a piece like Don did, you can use our new submission process, which is by putting in your run box. Go to Start Run and do ftp://bct@skular.onlinestoragesolution.com. And then when you paste your file into the list box that appears there, you'll be prompted for a user ID and password. The user ID will be BCT. That's Bravo Charlie Tango. And the password is submit. If you would also drop me an email to let me know that you have submitted a piece there. And we'll see if we can't play that on the air. I hope we can get some more good submissions like this one from Don. That is about going to do it for today's show. I appreciate you all listening. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can leave a comment on our voice line at 206-984-9203. Email us at the address blindcooltech@gmail.com. Check out our website at aph.org/tech/bct.htm. Or the best way to subscribe, actually not to get hold of us, but to subscribe to these shows, there'll be a XML address on that web page, which is http://www.aph.org/tech/bct.xml. You just plug that address into your iPodder or your podcatching software, and you will automatically get delivered new shows as they become available. Well, this is it. Until next time, we'll see y'all and have a great day. I'm Larry Skudkon signing out.